And welcome to the November 21st, 2022 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everybody for attending today and remind you and ask you to silence any electronic devices that you have with you today. For those attending electronically, please mute your screens. Today's meeting is a study and business session with a study session starting this morning at 10 a.m. and the afternoon business session scheduled to begin at 1 p.m. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. Members of the public are encouraged to ask specific questions after each item presented on the agenda. If you wish to provide additional comment or ask questions related to matters not on the agenda, time will be provided at the end of this morning's agenda on item number 8 under public comment. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand either physically or electronically, signaling that you wish to speak. When recognized, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today we have all 5 commissioners present. Manager Kirk Hudson is with us, General Counsel Eric Wahlquist, and Clerk of the Board, Rebecca Newman. Today, please join us with Hardy Thayer in leading the Pledge of Allegiance and the Safety Minute.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You have either a seat or the microphone there, whatever you're most comfortable with. Okay. Testing. Hi, guys. My name is Hardy Thayer. I am an electrical engineer, and I work in the distribution department under Chad Risman. So very happy to be here with you guys today to give the safety minute. And with COVID subsiding and things opening up more, plane tickets going down, I think Americans are wanting to travel more, travel overseas. So when Dave Parkhill asked me to do the safety minute, I chose traveling internationally. safety tips. So something kind of unique and personal to me, I thought something would be fun. I've done a lot of traveling internationally, grew up overseas. My dad worked overseas, also in the power business. So backpacked all over the world. 5 safety tips I'd like to share with you today is, number 1, keep all important documents with you. So I never leave passports in the hotel. I always have it in like a day pack, proof of entry. So, 5 years ago, for example, well, I think I'll move on to that later slide. Safety tip number 2, buy a travel guide, $20 off Amazon, a Lonely Planet guide. Number 3, carry your backpack up front. Number 4, buy bottled water. And also take into account the water that they use in cooking. It's like rice. Number 5, limit drawing attention to yourself. Don't flash your wealth. Next slide, please. So keep all important documents, your passport being probably the most important thing. Also proof of entry. So 5 years ago, I backpacked Cuba. And they gave me a proof of entry. And leaving the country, they almost didn't let me out because I lost my proof of entry. I also only had $5 in my wallet. So I would have not been very good had I not left the country. But I made it back in one piece. So, number 2. Next slide, please. My favorite travel guide by Lonely Planet. You could buy it from Amazon for $20, will pay for itself in one meal. You know, it gives you things like things to do, transportation, local currencies, cultures, weather, that sort of stuff. Definitely worth buying a Lonely Planet guide. Okay, some personal pictures. Carry your backpack up front. This personal pictures. Those are my folks in 2008 2001 in eastern Turkey, a place called Cappadocia. Those things in the background are fairy chimneys. So they'd be like these freestanding rocks on these chimneys. So 90s tech, you got, you know, camera, fanny pack, which I thought were not cool at the time. I think my parents tried to put one on me, and I lost it in like a day. There's me in the middle picture. That was 2004. That was a high school class field trip to Amman, which was pretty cool. And then that was the most recent picture in 2017. I had graduated to a half pack, or you can call it a man purse, whatever you need. But yeah, that's, you know, it went from a fanny pack all the way to a half pack. So yeah, don't try getting your kids fanny packs because those aren't very cool. Maybe they'll come back in style. I don't know. Bottled water. So my mom is Filipina. But yeah, so just whenever I go to the Philippines, out of the airport, I go try finding a big, like 2-liter bottle of water. The middle picture is in El Nido, Palawan, that long, skinny island in the western Philippines. Very beautiful. Highly suggest you guys go there. But one of the things you can do is do an island hopping tour. And they cook lunch for you right on the beach. I did take 2 buddies from the U.S., and we all got sick. And we couldn't figure out why. Well, it was the rice and the water that they cooked the rice in, right? So take that to mind when you're traveling. So limit drawing attention to yourself. Don't flash your wealth. I do like taking pictures when I go travel overseas, so I do have a camera. It's not a DSLR. It's a mirrorless camera. You can change lenses and whatnot. That second picture was in Havana, Cuba. It got kind of cropped in my presentation, but it was a wide-angle lens. I didn't even know it was going on, but a little festival going on, these women on stilts. So I was probably only like 5 feet away from them, but I got the wide angle. And then the second thing I like to take is my watch, which I'm wearing today. It's a Seiko automatic diver. I am a scuba diver, so you know, whenever I travel, I can go scuba diving with a nice watch. But I find it's not too gaudy. You know, I can wear it right now, and I can also wear it while I'm wearing a Carhartt. That last picture is probably my favorite picture I took in Cuba. It was a guy with one leg with a Cuban cigar. And yeah, it was just super cool. So that's all I had. Thanks, guys.
Quick question.
Yes.
You only had $5 left when you were in Cuba.
Uh-huh.
How hard was it really to get out?
Once I didn't have a proof of entry, so I showed them the visa that the guy had stamped while I was going to the country. So, you know, the funny thing, once I realized I only had $5, I was in the easternmost part of Cuba. So I was counting every cent, like, okay, that's enough for a bus ride back to Havana to the airport. I made it back.
So a safety tip would be maybe carry a little more money.
Carry a little bit more money and budget a little more. Lonely Planet Guide helps. I didn't know that American credit cards didn't work in Cuba.
Oh.
So, yeah, I didn't have that backup plan.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hardy.
Thanks, Hardy.
Kind of get you excited heading into winter to think about future traveling. So thank you for those safety tips. If you see me, just a point of information, if you see me jumping up and down during the meeting, I just had a knee replacement, and every once in a while I have to stand up and move. So if you're wondering what the heck is he doing, I'm stretching. sporting this new knee. Okay. Commissioners, our general manager, Kirk Hudson, is recommending moving resolution number 12 to the consent agenda. Additionally, for the public's information, items on the consent agenda are subject to transfer back to the regular agenda upon any request of a commission member. Do I hear any such request or additions to the agenda? All right. The agenda Yes, Ann.
Thanks. So, if I may interrupt, I just have a question. Resolution 12 is a sole source situation. Is it appearing on the agenda, regular agenda, because it is sole source, or is that why it's coming before the commission, strictly because it's sole source?
You want to take it?
It's coming before the commission because it's a continuing sole source declaration, which the board is responsible for supporting and waiving procurement requirements. So this is you'll hear it in the presentation. I don't really want to take that thunder, but a longstanding contract of sole source.
I was thinking we talked about that, and we talked about the fact that sole source automatically comes before the commission, and do we really need to do that with every sole source contractor?
We don't bring every sole source because we do have a $60,000 threshold, I think, that we've established, but
Else. Okay.
Yeah, the small work sole sourcing.
$60,000? Okay, so we did put some.
I'm not going to look over my shoulder because if I'm wrong, someone's shaking their head.
He's nodding. All right, cool. Thank you.
So you're okay moving that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure.
All right. So we'll move. Agenda stands with agenda item 12 going to consent. All right. Kirk, let's move forward to item number 3, CPO winner recognition.
Yeah, thank you. I'd like to invite Kerwin Lokusa. Come on up so they can see on the iPad, too. Yeah. Yeah. So Kerwin was nominated and awarded October's Cycle of Personal Ownership Award. And Kerwin has been with us in the Energy Resources Department for how long, Kerwin?
2.5 years.
2.5 years. So came almost during the beginning of COVID or right near that and been with us ever since. And
started interviewing basically right when the pandemic started.
Okay. Wow. Well, it's great to have Kerwin here. Kerwin actually was nominated for something he did associated with our daily collateralization process, and he automated it. This is a very manual process, and he took part of it and was able to come up with a lot of different data inputs and automate part of it, which we're really big on these because, one, it saves staff time, improves efficiency, and two, it reduces the chance of errors when you automate things most of the time.
there's things to work through. I mean, the majority of the work that my team does is for people inside of Energy Resources, but this one goes, we use it as well, but Jamie and Sue in the risk department heavily rely on this process. So my brain, fortunately but unfortunately, doesn't really shut off. I just constantly am thinking about ways to improve things. So when I got this project, I kind of thought about how we could make the process work for them, but also make it simpler and more user-friendly going forward. So they get the data they want, but they also have the ability to kind of go in and edit the way the process works and upload the future sort of necessary data files. So it should sort of be self-managed going forward for them as well. So I think that they appreciate having that kind of visibility. And maybe that's why they nominated me. But really, I'm just trying to get them more involved in the process as well.
Well, certainly exemplify the cycle of personal ownership and that you saw a need and filled it and jumped right in to help another department. So really appreciate it. Keep up the good work. And Kerwin was one of the recent 30 under 35 award winners as well, Wenatchee World. So making a big impact here in a short period of time.
So I'll jump in really quick. So, Kerwin, so, well, congratulations, first of all.
Thank you.
So you felt comfortable making these changes. You know, innovation is something that we're really striving to do more of. So you felt like you could make these changes without, you know, going steps here and there. And
but there's definitely a process to follow to make sure everything works and it's tested before users rely on the data in a production environment. But prior to joining the district, I was working at a company where I was the first employee, first engineer, and we built sort of electric drive chain system for boats from the ground up. And I spent 8 years having no idea what I was doing every single day at work, like just literally figuring it out, trying to understand from an engineering perspective what needed to be built. So this kind of the environment I'm more used to is just kind of chaos and trying to make sense of what needs to happen and figure out a way to kind of get it from A to B, and then hopefully over time mature the process. So working in an environment like this where there are existing processes is actually kind of a big adjustment for me. So I would, you know, I'm comfortable working in that from scratch environment, and I'm always looking for areas where we can improve things as much as possible. But I really want to try and understand what's, you know, the processes are in place here to make sure that I'm not going to break something going forward as well, because that would not be good.
Good. Glad to hear it. Thank you.
Real quick, this is Sean Smith, Managing Director of Energy Resources, and I think that's what Kirk's kind of brought forward is this innovation culture, and that's, Kerwin's been great in that. I think that, like he talks about, that kind of fits his personality more, and it's great to get these ideas out and then actually implement them. So that's been, you know, a refreshing adaptation we've seen this year, which has been great.
Yeah. Hopefully there's a few more things we can do going forward.
Yeah, keep doing it.
I know there's a lot of changes coming for our department and my team specifically over the next couple of years, so this may just be the first stepping stone.
Great. Well, and as a past educator, it always does my soul well to get these recommendations here at the board level, and also at the Wenatchee World, I have to give them credit for their 30 under 30 and see people recognized and the great things they're doing and the efforts that the Wenatchee World's making. So congratulations. Thank you for being here today.
All right. Have a good rest of your meeting.
Thanks, Kerwin.
All right. At this time, I'm going to go ahead and invite Dan Frazier to come up, and I'll speak a little bit before you get started here, Dan, on the process that we're going to follow today. Under our Roberts Rules of Order, there's going to be a process in how I will direct and manage our meeting today. Dan will be making a presentation to the board on the Fifth Street redevelopment, and after he's completed, I will then open it up to the public for comment, and each person that would like to address the commission will get 3 minutes. State your name and address and share your comments with us. We would appreciate that. And then I will close public comment, and then the commissioners will begin their deliberation and their work and go in any direction that they decide to go. So I just wanted everybody to understand the process. When after I close public comment, the questions from the public will then be closed, and the commissioners will not be accepting any more public comment at that point. Commissioners will then be directed to ask any questions they have of staff, but we will then begin our deliberations. So, all right, Dan, welcome.
Maybe. Thanks. Maybe just a clarification, too. There's another public comment point later on in the agenda, too. For other issues.
So this will be just public comment for, thank you very much. Yep. This will be just public comment that will open up for Fifth Street development. At the end of, at item number 8, there will be a public comment for anything else anybody else wants to address. So thanks for that clarification.
Yeah, you bet.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning, Commissioners. Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services. I'm here to talk to you today about the Fifth Street redevelopment. We've been here several times to talk about this project over the last couple years. We're going to be talking about the process we went through and some of the goals, and then the options that are being presented today. Okay, so the first question we have, why we're going through this process. Why a redevelopment plan? And so we'll kind of recap why we went this direction and some of the process we went through. And then we're going to recap the RFP process itself from the issuance of the RFP through where we are today. We'll summarize the feedback that was provided from the evaluation committee as well as the public, and we'll review the options for board action. We do have a slide in here to pause for public comment as Commissioner McKenna indicated. So redevelopment planning, why did we do this? This is an interesting process for an agency like us to undertake. Really, it came about as the service center project started to gain traction. There was some angst in the community about what the impacts of Chelan County's potential departure from downtown could mean to downtown, what the economic impacts, and maybe even more importantly, what uses could come into the site that would not complement downtown. We don't need something here that really detracts from downtown. So we heard that from several community members, especially our downtown association, our chamber. We're very concerned about the potential for the PUD to move and what that would mean for the long-term health of downtown. So we looked at that impact, those impacts or potential impacts, and kind of bounced those off our vision, which is doing the best for the most for the longest. And so how can we assure that when we leave, the impacts of a new service center aren't negative and affect the public in a negative way for years to come? So what we did is we decided to partner with the Port of Chelan County at the time and the City of Wenatchee on a redevelopment planning process. And this process brought in the Wenatchee Downtown Association and the Chamber as stakeholders. And we developed a community guidance document. This went through several public meetings, several trips to the board to talk about what the goals of that process would be. And ultimately, we wanted to provide a development that enhances downtown, that it supports downtown's core economic mission and wouldn't detract from the future of downtown. So we developed that in 2019, and this board adopted that document in 2020. We went through that process with a consultant that does this kind of planning process with mostly on the west side, but has worked throughout the Northwest. And so from that, one of the recommendations was how do we then implement that planning process and bring in potential developers that can help us see this through. The port was instrumental in this process. In fact, about this time is when the Port of Chelan County merged with Douglas County and became the Regional Port Authority. And their direction was, well, we think you should try an RFP process. An RFP process is kind of an open process that allows you to hear from the development community, tells you what they think can be done, but you can direct them and guide them through the planning document that we developed over time. So that's what we did. We actually entered into an interlocal agreement with the port, with the Regional Port Authority, and that was for them to oversee the process, help market the property, and then work on the evaluation and ultimate recommendation. So I won't go through all these dates, but the RFP process was a very exhaustive process. We wanted to make sure that we were continuing to provide public input. So we went through a solicitation. We did have a request about a week or week and a half before the initial due date to extend that due date, which we did. We provided an extended due date and provided additional tours of the facility for interested developers. On May 16th, we did receive four proposals. We then went through an evaluation process, and that evaluation process was conducted by the City, the Port, the PUD, and the Wenatchee Downtown Association and the Chamber. And we went through kind of a two-stage. The first one was more of a qualitative, what do we think about these proposals, just to talk about where their strengths and weaknesses were. And then we actually scored those proposals in June. And then once those were scored, it was very obvious there was a short list of developers that we wanted to move forward with. And so we went back to our community advisory group that participated in the development of the guidance document. And we asked them to help us look at those proposals and how do we provide feedback to the proposers that would be meaningful in order to help distinguish between the two. What was lacking? What additional information could we use? And so we got some great feedback and we brought that to the commission. And those are the commission meetings where we came and gave updates, received feedback, and ultimately we came in August 1st with that shortlisted finalist to take action, board action to shortlist, and to develop the feedback that we were providing and direction we were providing to the two shortlisted developers. So that took us into the shortlist process. So in August, we provided feedback and instructions to the shortlisted proposers. We gave them pretty specific feedback, some general feedback about what we're looking for in this next round, but also some specific things to address in their individual proposals. Unfortunately, on September 15th, we were notified that one of the two shortlisted proposers was withdrawing from the process. We did meet with that proposer to discuss what were the concerns, why were they wanting to pull out, and a lot of it had to do with a call it a an awareness that this project wasn't going to get done without a substantial, very significant public investment on the site. And so they felt like their request for that was not going to be looked at favorably just because of the amount they were thinking that they would need. It really gave the property a negative residual value to do what they were planning to do with the site. And so they felt, they went through their investment committee, and their investment committee said it's not worth pursuing. So that was the feedback we got from that second developer. But we did continue on with the shortlist process on October 10th. We interviewed the final proposer. They presented a revised proposal, and it was responsive to the feedback that we gave them in terms of what we wanted to see in a second proposal. And then the recommendation team met to discuss the proposal and what we would do for a recommendation from the team. On November 2nd, we received a letter from the Chelan Douglas Port, the City of Wenatchee, the Downtown Association, and the Chamber of Commerce that recommended selecting GTS Development and initiating negotiations for the sale of the property and a development agreement associated with that sale. The PUD, through internal discussions, talked about some of the concerns we had going that direction. Some of which is surrounding the economic conditions. Having the other developer give us information that they thought was relevant to the project. We did review that. The economic conditions have definitely changed since we started this process. And the withdrawal of that second developer kind of disrupted that idea of a competitive evaluation between some options. And I know this board asked for some options, and we were at that point unable to provide anything more than one option. Final developer did revise their financial offer from the $4 million initial to negotiated. And we were really kind of concerned about these project risks that we were seeing. And we heard from the other developer and from GTS about the amount of investment the site needed, some uncertainty about the mix of uses, and can we figure out how to negotiate through some of those concerns as we go through the process. And so internal discussions were held, and we wanted to provide the board with some options. And so what we've arrived at is the following two options. Option number one would be to act on the recommendation of the review team, instruct staff to enter negotiations for a purchase and sale and development agreement with GTS. So I'm going to read these because I want to make sure I'm saying it correctly. And option number two is to conclude the RFP process without selecting a developer and direct staff to explore alternative options which are in line with that community vision document, including but not limited to a direct sale. And one of this number two here was really kind of a response to what we were hearing about mitigating some of the risks identified, maybe site preparation, maybe public improvements adjacent to the property, possibly working with some of the stakeholders that have an interest in the property directly, but maybe a phased approach, which would take some of those risks, have the PUD address those risks, and then come back with a later phase that could be developed maybe with an anchor tenant. Or consider another round of proposals, whether those are for the site in total or for the site, just a portion of the site. So those are the options that staff is presenting to the board today, and that's ready for any comments if there are any questions.
All right. Next slide. Any questions?
A question for Dan, and that going back a couple of months to when the second developer pulled out, and in the private conversations indicated concerns over the financial viability. They didn't put a dollar amount on that, did they?
We actually did have a good conversation where they were throwing out ranges of costs for different things that they saw would need to get done for the project. And when you started adding those up, somewhere between $20 and $30 million of public investment is what they were looking at to get the property ready for them to develop, essentially. And some of those, they had discussions with the city, and the city was contemplating, or is contemplating, forming a tax increment financing district. And that would allow some public improvement to be paid through that mechanism. But that mechanism itself could not fund the level that they were looking at. So we looked at other options for that, including the PUD funding a portion of that. And they realized that there was a huge ask for this project.
Dan, when you gave that dollar amount, your microphone cut out on me. Could you repeat that, please?
It was, I'm sorry, Commissioner, it was between $20 and $30 million in public investment.
Thank you.
That's why his mic cut out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Dan, we may come back to you with some additional questions, but at this time, I would like to open it up for public comment. Again, the public comment, to clarify, is just on the Fifth Street redevelopment project. Is there anybody that would like to address the commission?
Good morning, commissioners. I am Stacy Demester, and I'm here on behalf of the Chelan Douglas Regional Port Authority. For the record, my address is 432 Erica Lane in Wenatchee. And I've been leading the effort on behalf of the port for the redevelopment. It's been a long, long process. I think we're coming up on a year. We've agreed to the process, and things have come up, and we've had to adapt. And it's been a great partnership moving forward through all the challenges. Dan did a great job recapping the whole process. The one thing I would like to say is this whole process really validated the Collins-Warman report. If I'm honest, at the beginning, I was like, wow, that is a big development plan for Wenatchee. We haven't seen anything like that. And we had several developers come out and give it a go at trying to incorporate the elements of that plan into this redevelopment process and their plans. And I think we had a couple of top developers that showed it could be done. I know there are questions about that. Dan did mention that we did provide a recommendation to move forward with GTS. There were several reasons for that. I'd like to just touch on a couple of them. Mainly one is incorporating many of the key elements of the community vision plan, especially the connectivity to the riverfront and downtown. Everyone has expressed that is vital to this redevelopment. It really ties everything together. The city has done a great job developing out the waterfront. We have a very vibrant and active downtown, and this is the path to connect those two. GTS has proven that they have the relevant experience and qualifications and financial backing to pull off this type of development. And they've also partnered with some very well-respected people, Grand Baba Architects, who everyone knows them around here for doing Pybus Market. They've done some other adaptive reuse plans in town. They're very well-respected in the Seattle area as well. They've also partnered with another local real estate developer who has a good track record and is well known in town. They also showed their ability to work collaboratively with stakeholders in the community. We gave them some pretty tough feedback in August. We said, look, you came in and you gave us this giant redevelopment plan. We don't know that that's exactly feasible. Here are concerns. You know, you need to go out in the community, figure out what the community wants, find some partnerships, show us how this is achievable. And we really feel that that's what they did. And I know this type of decision is really difficult for public agencies. I work for one. We're used to knowing exactly what we're getting for the exact price up front before we move forward. And redevelopment projects just don't work that way. You have to find a partner to work with and negotiate through, give and take. And in the end, you're going to come out with something along the lines of what they proposed, but it may not be exactly. And the other thing to remember is at any time during those negotiations, either party could back out. You know, like I said, we're a year into this, and we really feel that moving forward with GTS, at least start negotiating, getting some of these questions answered and concerns addressed, is really time well spent. But that being said, the decision definitely rests in your guys' hands. The port is committed to being your partner, and we will support you in whatever decision you make. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other comments?
Okay, I'm going to ask you to imagine with me, because I'm delivering this message for someone else that's tall and bald and a different gender and a downtown storefront owner. So good morning, commissioners. I'm Josh Tarr. I am a small business owner, a board member of the Wenatchee Downtown Association, and a next-door neighbor of the PUD redevelopment project. The loss of the PUD service center from its current location will be a devastating blow to the downtown core. We have made long-standing relationships with many PUD employees and have counted on their business to sustain us through the years, as many of us have tailored our businesses to their needs. While we know the relationships have been built with, we've built will encourage many to go out of their way to continue their patronage, the real estate vacuum left in the wake will potentially endanger our livelihood. That is why today I come to you as a friend and a neighbor to ask you once again to consider the overwhelmingly community-minded, well-designed, and previously proven proposal from GTS. Its comprehensive plan offers exactly what the downtown core needs by a group with absolute success in other local projects like PIBUS. While some of you won't be around to feel the effects of the massive changes about to engulf our downtown core, I know you can appreciate having the foresight, compromise, and wisdom to solidify your legacy by ensuring this project has the greatest positive effect it can for all of Wenatchee and its beloved downtown core. Thank you for your time, and thank you for letting us be an important part of the positive mark you leave here in our valley. Josh Tarr is the owner of American Shoe Shop. I don't know the address formally. It's across the street from 137 North Wenatchee Avenue, however, so that would make it an even number, right? And I am Jerry Barkley. I am the board president of the Downtown Association currently. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks.
Any other commenters? Come on up.
I have followed this through.
Could you give us your name and address, please?
Sure. Sorry. Dave Galatly, 446 Allison Street, Wenatchee. I followed this through pretty much along with the partners, Port, the Chamber, the Downtown Association. I would agree with most everything that's been said here. But I think what hasn't been said is, you know, Wenatchee is still small enough that when you have a conversation with somebody, it might just get around to others. And what I understand, and it seems to come from legitimate information, is that Commissioner Congdon has made the comment that in no way in the world would she ever vote for GTS. I've also heard that she hates Lookout development. And, you know, I lived in Chelan for 15 years. I wasn't very excited about the Lookout development either. But, you know, it's not GTS's fault. They were given the go-ahead. They were permitted. If, you know, if people want to whine about a development like that, you know, take it to the people who are doing the permitting. I can feel the same way about the $150 million Taj Mahal that the PUD is building out at the north end of town. it's creating some serious problems for some of those us who live out there. And we still don't know a lot about how those are going to be mediated. Anyway, I'm kind of getting off the point here a little bit. The other thing I would ask is, if you vote not to accept GTS's proposal, what is the next step? That mean we don't know? Okay, well, I think maybe this hasn't been thought out as far as it maybe it should have been or could have been, and that there's still a lot of work to be done before it's finalized into how the development is actually going to take place. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. Other commenters? All right.
Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
I am Ted Schroth. I am GTS, which is just part of the team that we put together is myself, Avara Construction, and Gray and Baba Architects. We didn't seek to be involved in this project. I actually didn't even know about it until spring. We received a call and were asked to throw our hat in the ring. And so we did so. Of course, I knew that the trees would be an issue. So I asked the question several times up front, are the trees going to be an issue? Because if so, we won't start. Because it's taken over the past 6-7 months, tens of thousands of dollars and hundreds of hours of effort. We've put a lot of time and thought into this, and we've worked hard to forge local partnerships, as we did in Chelan with the Lookout, including with Steve and Dory and the YMCA, multiple discussions with the mayor's office, the Music Theater of Wenatchee, Bart Tilley, who would like to purchase one of the buildings and do a pickleball center, Wenatchee Valley College, and most recently, a hotel developer that's interested in partnering if we were awarded the project on a boutique hotel. And that's just kind of the beginning, because it's kind of hard to forge local partnerships when it's not your property. We're just a team that may or may not get the property. So trying to kill Mark McNaughton's trees was the dumbest thing I've ever done in my life. I can't ever change that. It's not who I am. I paid a heavy price for it. It's highly embarrassing. It's not something I'm proud of, but I can't change it. I will say that I am bullish on Chelan County. I've loved working on the Lookout for the past 11 years and probably many more ahead of us. As incoming Commissioner Allen knows, we worked and continue to work extensively with local partners in Chelan, including our vendors, the city, commercial tenants, commercial partnerships, and of course the community center at Lake Chelan, which is very analogous to the YMCA. We've worked really hard to make that project achieve liftoff. So I guess really your deliberations will boil down to, do you trust that our team would negotiate fairly? Would we listen to what the community of Wenatchee and its citizens want? And would we execute? Would we do what we said we were going to do? And of course, trust is something that's earned over time. And I understand that some of you may not be able to get past your ideas about the Lookout or the tree issue, and I understand that. And of course, I'm sitting here because we would love to do this project, and I love Chelan County. I love the city of Wenatchee. I love the partnerships that we've established so far, and we are committed to try negotiate something fair and do something great. But of course, that's not up to me. It's up to you guys. And so if you pick us, we are committed to that. And I just wanted to come here and let you guys know that. And I'm available to answer any questions if you like. Thank you for your time.
So may I comment? Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ted. Yeah. First of all, thanks for stepping up and making your comment about the trees and how you made a mistake. And I certainly understand that. I appreciate your honesty. I've certainly made a lot of mistakes in my lifetime. So my issue is not the trees. My issue is lookout. And I mean, that's no secret. I've stated that, but I didn't say I hate the lookout. I don't use the word hate. I really don't. I have this saying about that, but I don't like the lookout. A lot of people don't. And what it is to me, it's an embarrassment for the town of Chelan. That's just my own personal opinion. I just wanted to be upfront with you and say I appreciate you, you know, the courage to come forward and talk about your mistake. That's not my issue with
thank you
and with the development. Yeah, thank you.
We'd love to give you a tour of the lookout.
I've toured it. Thanks.
Thank you, Ted. Anything else for Ted? Ted, thank you.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Speaking. Okay. Anything else? Any other commenters? Okay, at this time, I am going to close public comment on the Fifth Street redevelopment and turn this back over to my fellow commissioners. We have some options. It's our turn to get to work and make a decision on which direction we'd like to go. That can be done either through continued discussion, or if we're following Robert's rules, we can make a motion and then have our discussion from there. Commissioners, what's your preference?
Probably follow Robert's rules.
I'd like to follow Robert's rules. And there was a couple options presented to us.
You have the motions up there.
So at this time, we'll look at the two options for a motion for consideration before we then move into further discussion.
What happens if neither option fully fulfills our need?
You may make whatever option or ever motion you choose, including no motion today.
I don't know if it's I won't call it a point of order or whatever you want to call it, Robert's rules. But, option two seems to be quite open-ended without a closure date.
This one actually has a date in it, February.
I apologize.
February 21st.
That changed.
Yeah, we did spend some time with staff making sure that, you know, it wasn't open-ended.
Read it ahead of time. Okay.
Yep.
Very good.
So is that... Randy, is that too far out for you?
No.
Is that an issue? Before I make the motion.
I think that date probably would work. Yeah.
So, Mr. Chairman, I will make the motion. I move to direct staff to close out the Fifth Street redevelopment request for proposal process without selecting a proposer, and further direct staff to work with project stakeholders to develop alternatives which are consistent with the identified community vision and present options for board consideration not later than the commission meeting scheduled for February 21, 2023.
And I'll second that motion.
Okay, at this time we will then open up for discussion. Any further discussion?
I would defer to the maker of the motion if she wants, but I do want to make some comments.
Okay.
I don't have any right now at this time. I've made mine pretty much.
Yeah. I'm really glad that Dave Glatley got up and said what he said. If you want to pull that, get that motion he indicated that we as a commission really aren't ready for our path forward, and I agree. I look back at this process over the last couple of years, and I want to say thank you to everybody that did a lot of work and got us a long way, but I don't think we're there yet. And my point is not to reject anything, but to say we're not ready to make a decision, and we need more information. You know, a lot of things. I've thought about this over the weekend. I didn't know what I was going to hear here this morning, and what I think I heard is there is a support for this type of project going forward, which I think this commission embraces support of a project of this type. But there's a lot of unknowns, and quite honestly, maybe we as a commission, or I as a commissioner, need to be a little bit introspective in saying maybe we gave the wrong parameters initially for the development process. We know there's challenges with this site. This option two would allow the opportunity for our staff to look at those challenges and propose maybe a different path where another proposal for redevelopment could be more successful in our eyes. And I'm all for the redevelopment. But for those in the audience that I haven't done this, shared this with before, I refer you to the wall over there in the corner, the best for the most for the longest. I've learned to come to live by that when I sit in this boardroom and recognize that we are a countywide agency, and we need to represent the interests of the entire county, and we need to get it as right as we possibly can. There's no such thing as perfection, but I think we've come a long way. I was very, very disappointed back in August, September, when I found out that I wouldn't have options to look at this point in time going forward. A proposal is different than having options. A proposal is, this is what you're going to get. And that didn't feel right because of those unanswered questions. I'm all in favor of us ultimately moving forward, and it could come back to a GTS. I can't say that it will or will not. But I think we have to address at the utility level some of the concerns that have been expressed not only by GTS but by the other developer that Dan said pulled out late in the game. We need to look at that as a utility and say, can we get this more right from our end than we currently have it? And this will give the staff, in essence, 3 months to see what we can get right and then potentially move forward from there. So that's my comments.
Thank you, Randy. I reinforce those same comments. I think I would be saying the same thing. I think I'm in the same place that as a learning organization, we need to listen to the proposers that came before us, talk about the roadblocks that are there that possibly we can look at, see what we can do as an organization to remove some of those roadblocks, represent that to our community for feedback and ideas, again, reinforcing the vision that has been stated, and during some economic uncertain times, revisit this and come up with the best plan possible and the best options for consideration. So thank you, Randy. Any comments, Gary?
Thank you, Steve. I've given some significant thought to this project and the redevelopment, and I want to make clear
this commissioner and I would go so far as to speak for this commission's support to work with the YMCA, to work with the music theater, to work with others to achieve a successful outcome. I think all of us in this room really are striving for the same thing. So there is no us against them. If it feels that way, put it aside, because there is none. But what we want to do is we want to get it right. Feeling rushed, feeling like you only have one dance partner is never, never the right way to go. Because you make decisions that ultimately turn out to not be the best decision that would be available, simply because you have no options, you have no choices. Dave, thank you for your presentation. One of the things you talked about with the building up in Chelan is the permitting process. So that, you know, blame the permitters who allowed it, right? Well, to some extent, we're the very first step in that permitting process. If we agree to sell it, that's the same thing as giving our approval. So that's one of the reasons we're here today, is to make sure that the outcome achieves what everyone in this room wants. I like Ted.
Ted, I like you. You're a great guy. And frankly, I hope that what happens today, and I'm not sure because we haven't voted yet, but I hope you stay with this project. I'd love you to be the guy who brings it to fruition. But we have some things here that just don't feel right at this point. I spent 36 years in investment banking. We've got a piece of property that was valued at $6 million. We narrowed it down to two bidders. One pulled away. The other guy says, I told you I'd give you $4 million, but now I'm not. We're going to negotiate it. And, oh, by the way, we're looking for maybe $20, $25 million in improvements on the site. That goes against my grain. This doesn't work. And honestly, if any of you in this audience were to sell your personal home that way, you'd be insane, right? One of the things when I ran as a commissioner that I heard time and time and time again, the PUD sells things too cheap and pays too much money for what they buy. I see heads nodding in this audience. Y'all know that. We've heard that for years, right? Well, under the current offer of, we don't know what we'll pay you, and by the way, you're going to spend $20 to $25 million to do site improvements, that's just one more step in the history of the PUD, selling it too cheap and paying too much for what they buy. My fiduciary responsibility as a commissioner will not let me do that. I wish I could. I love you, Ted. You're a great guy. Your plan is wonderful. And I'm a pickleball junkie. So I'm all over the pickleball. But it's what my fellow commissioner said. We're just not there yet. Give me some comfort. Give me a number. Give me something that I'm not going to be embarrassed taking to the customer owners of Chelan County PUD. The folks in this room are representing the Wenatchee downtown area. I get that. But I represent the South District. That includes people that can't afford a Starbucks coffee a month. That was my obligation in terms of putting this suit on and taking this job. So I need more. I need more information. And I hope we can move forward with this quickly and rapidly and achieve success that everyone in this room wants, including the city. But I just feel that we're not there yet. And February 21st, I hope I can sit here and say we are there, that we've gotten there. But I want to circle back, and I want to commit my unwavering support for the YMCA, the music theater, and for the other organizations that are going to benefit from what this ultimately looks like when it's done. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Dennis, is there anything you wish to say before I call for a vote?
I think I'm pretty much on record with my opinion. For the first time in 16 years, Dave Gladly said something today that I agree with. That was a statement that we don't know yet. We don't know, and we don't. I agree with Gary that there's not enough information to make a decision on that supports our local arts, as well as the other people in the other communities, outlying communities of Chelan County. There's just not enough clarity here for decision making. And I guess, you know, Gary, you referred to, if you were selling a house, would you sell it under those conditions? If I were building a house, I wouldn't build it under these conditions. There's too many nebulous areas that have yet to be answered. I would not make personally this investment at this time with a lack of information. So it's hard for me as a steward of public trust and dollars to make a recommendation on a vagueness. I also am not naive enough to understand that a development project of community value is not a different animal, and it is. I think this is going to be a patient process, and one that if we take our time, ask a few more questions, solicit a little bit more response, and have a deeper understanding of what we're looking for and what the community expects, a better decision will be made. I also understand that this is probably my last opportunity in the next 6 weeks to weigh in on this project. And I know there are people that are grateful for that. But I'm speaking from my heart in terms of we're not ready yet to make a step this large in the support of downtown Wenatchee, the outlying communities of Wenatchee, the arts community, and supporting an organization, a construction company, a development company that also needs to make a profit. All of those are intertwined. And I think we need a little more wisdom, a little more time. So I would be very supportive of the motion that's on the floor to be able to study that in perpetuity. And I also have explicit trust of two new commissioners coming on, one new commissioner and one who's experienced, that they will represent you as well in their wisdom and their decision making. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dennis. Let's go ahead and bring up the motion back up to the screen, please. So we have a motion on the table. At this time, I'll call for a vote. Commissioners, all those in favor of option number 2, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you very much. All right. This time, we are going to move into item number 5, our quarterly electrical load growth update.
With us is Andy Wendell and Chad Rissman.
Thank you, Kirk. Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
Okay, November 21st, our quarterly electric load update. Seems like we were just here yesterday giving you the last update.
It's colder out now, though.
Yeah, it doesn't look like that picture right
now. No,
it
certainly doesn't.
Yeah, there is snow in Leavenworth. Nobody else has that, but we have.
Oh, we do.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Gary does.
Oh, we do. Okay, why we are here today, 2022, we'll talk about new services and meter installations. Our growth for 2022 and our load forecast update, which is looking forward over the next 10 years. We'll talk a little bit about some new applications and inquiries that have come in since last time we met. And, of course, right now we've got an aggressive substation build plan, and we want to kind of recap where we're at on that. We're not asking the board to take any action today, but your feedback is always welcome. Okay, this slide shows the new meter installations going back to 2017 and forward to year-to-date 2022. You can see that we average right around 1,000 meters each year. And that's what we've seen over the last few years, and we're still projecting that today. Currently, we're at 731 new residential meters countywide with 77 new commercial meters. And again, we're projected to get up around that 1,000 number. No new industrial meters this year. I think if you were to compare these numbers across to our total meters in the county, we're adding somewhere between 1.5% and 2% of meters growth each year. What's interesting about that is from a load growth perspective, that's not translating into 1.5% to 2% per growth per year. And we'll talk specifically about why that is a little bit later in the presentation. I would note that we are projected to have about 1,000 new meters over the next 3 years looking forward as well. So
each year?
Each year. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of activity. We've gotten a lot of new applications, of course, since we've seen you in August or September. But wanted to just point out a few of the larger ones. One that's come to fruition through the application process is the Leavenworth Meadows, the previously known as the Men property, which is estimated to be around 300 units of both single family as well as multifamily residential housing in the Leavenworth area. We do have an inquiry. We've met with a developer for the Peshastin development, as we're referring to it as. It's around 134 lots, and it's residential units, primarily single-family residential units. That impacts not only our electric system, but our water and our future water systems, and of course our wastewater systems, as well as our fiber optic network. Oh, so we're working through various options on that inquiry, and we do anticipate that to develop into full application. Interesting enough, there's been an inquiry by the Chelan County Natural Resources Division to site a lumber mill in Chelan County. They've looked at areas in the north end of the county, around the Chelan Falls area, as well as down in the Malaga area. So that inquiry continues. We're having continued conversation on that. And then one area that we've brought up in this presentation passes the Lineage property area. And we're continuing to have conversations about potential applications there as well. So it's fair to say that we're still getting applications and we're still having a lot of conversations about development, similar to the previous presentation. And as time goes, we'll bring more information forward. Okay, to our 10-year electric load forecast. This is a busy slide. So I'm going to start from the top and go down from there. So this looks out over the next 10 years. And just note that it is net of our energy conservation plans. And as you know, we conserve a portion of our total load in energy conservation. And to my knowledge, we have either met or exceeded those conservation measures each year, and we certainly have plans to do so in the future as well. This forecast does exclude new large loads, referring to things like, you know, Microsoft or large energy sales contracts outside of our immediate county area. Okay, going down that first column, you can see that we've got base cases, high cases, and low cases. Of course, we refer to these as the jaws, and when we're doing the forecast, we think about what is, yes.
I didn't mean to interrupt you mid-sentence. I was trying to. Yeah. So you said this does not include some of the large loads outside of the county area. Is that what you said?
What I meant to say is this does not include those large power sales contracts.
But they are within the county.
And large loads that would be, unique power sales contracts within the
county. Okay. All right. Okay, yeah. So each one would be a distinct, unique contract. So they're not.
That's right.
So folded in.
Another way to look at this is we consider this our organic growth, our typical residential, commercial,
yeah,
industrial customers outside of those large loads that we've been hearing about and talking about recently.
Maybe just add a little bit of framing for that. So this load forecasting team is very much focused in on this organic growth or loads that would be growing that are smaller than the 5 megawatts, because we're focused on trying to ensure that we've got the right infrastructure installed in order to meet that organic growth. Anything over 5 megawatts goes through an application process that includes power marketing and trading, transmission and distribution planning. And so oftentimes there are infrastructure that are identified and energy resources that are identified associated with each one of those large power or larger power contracts. So we're less concerned from the load forecasting standpoint about those, because they're coming with requirements to meet energy resources, and they're coming with requirements, capacity and infrastructure requirements. It's this organic growth that we want to make sure we have a better understanding on, so it doesn't exceed our ability to be able to serve, because it's not going through those additional application processes and things. So just
frame.
Does that help?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, good clarification. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, so we do look at a base case, we look at a low case, and a high case. Moving down the chart, you can see in April and July, we brought forward a load forecast of 31 average megawatts in a base case, and that's about 1.5% growth. You can see here in November, our current forecast, we're at 15 average megawatts. That's a significant change from the previous forecast that we've brought forward to you. So I'm sure you're going to ask the questions why, and we want to shed some light on that. There's some notes down below, and they largely reflect, you know, why we're realizing a reduction in our load forecast. First and foremost, we have changed our customer information system to a new system, and we reorganized some of our customer class data. And to be specific, we've cleansed some of that data. And the way we're pushing that data through for our load forecasting has changed slightly. We think we have better data as a result of that today. Second bullet, we have lower than expected growth in 2021 and 2022's forecasts for both residential and commercial growth. And the reality of it is that we've realized, you know, somewhat of a levelizing or flattening of load growth in the residential and commercial sectors, both in to be specific, in residential, we've actually seen a slight reduction in growth. So how can we put 800 or 1,000 new meters in for residential and commercial and see an actual reduction in growth? It's a fantastic question. And the reality of it is that we are seeing changes in end use for our customers, both in the residential side as well as commercial side. I think it's fair to say that if you go into restaurants today, there's maybe fewer staff, maybe less throughput, lower occupancy rates in hotels, and those various commercial aspects. In residential, which is interesting, we have a higher demographics of seasonal homes here. But in addition, and probably one of the largest influences that changes in Washington State Energy Code. Washington State Energy Code is very aggressive, particularly on the residential side of things, where constructing energy-efficient homes is part of that code. And it results in a lower kilowatt-hour consumption than what we've seen in many years in the past.
Have we also seen a shift in the type of housing being built, where, I mean, you know, we're look across railroad tracks here, those apartments, every one of them has a meter.
Right.
And they're a lot smaller, and so their use per meter would definitely, I would think, be substantially reduced from what we're used to.
Yeah, Commissioner Smith, you're absolutely correct. We have a A lot of those new meter counts are multifamily housing and smaller footprint. They have a smaller energy consumption per square foot each year. So we're making those adjustments into our forecast as we know more about new and developing multifamily housing.
Mm-hmm. Andy, just a quick question, and really tagging on what Randy just mentioned. Older construction oftentimes has baseboard electric heat, and I'm assuming that part of the new code requires energy efficient heating systems. And is that part of what's been woven into the new projection?
Yeah, I think it is. And of course, that energy code goes far beyond just heating. Yes, it is definitely having an impact, as well as our own energy conservation programs. We have a robust and a wide offering of energy conservation measures in the residential sector, which is a big focus today. That also is having an impact on that. So we're making those adjustments in our forecasts as well.
Maybe just one comment on that too. The existing housing too, baseboard heat, always been resistive heat here in Chelan County. I think socioeconomic conditions and the prices of equipment and materials are such that heat pumps and things like that are in reach for folks and are a lot more efficient. So not only do you get heating with a heat pump, but you also get air conditioning. And I know I've got a split system and they're under $1,000 to put in. So, they're starting to be competitive to the old window shakers. So I think there's some things, this is somewhat anecdotal, but speculation, but I think there are some changes that are going on within the established sectors, residential sectors too.
So on that, Chad, great comment, but causes me to wonder, with the shift towards EVs, is any of that being looked at and part of your calculation and how that might impact your projections?
Yes, we do incorporate EV projections into our forecasts, and this does represent what EVs will bring in. I think that you're going to see that EVs and the load impacts are going to have a greater projection a little bit further out as adoption rates increase. I know Chad and engineering and are working on some modeling right now of various EVs, both in fleet transitions as well as just kind of the standard homeowner EV cars. And we're making some progress in understanding there. But I think we'll see that in 3 to 5 years out as adoption rates increase.
Thank you.
We do have included some EV in the forecast that's baked into the forecast.
Chad, I just wanted to double check. Is window shaker an engineering term?
It is for Chad.
common term.
Yeah. Okay, so to summarize, our base case is 15 average megawatts. That's a reduction from the 31 average megawatts that we had in July of 2020. That results in about 0.7% increase, or less than 1%. Our high case has also reduced from 107 to 47 average megawatts. That is large in part to the settling out of those large loads, such as the Diamond Foundry, and a recognition that we simply are not receiving inquiries and applications for those large cryptocurrency installations that we're seeing over the last 5 years. So we have a lot more confidence around that. And our low case is really representative of kind of recession type growth in our forecast. So I hope that helps clarify a little bit of that. Now, keep in mind that that's average energy, right? So we largely, for this forecast, talk about average energy. What we're concerned with on the utility services side is peak energy, right? And peak energy, that coldest day of the year. And do we have the infrastructure, the substations, the distribution lines to support that peak time in our system that is we're at most at risk?
I might just make one other comment. The district is supporting, and commissioner is supporting, and we're building the automatic metering That's going to provide a finite amount of data to the team. I expect, and the load forecasting team expects, like when we upgraded and updated our billing system, we're expecting probably to have another data correction as a result of that too. So we're looking for, the load forecasting team is looking forward to AMI because it's going to provide more finite information that'll be time stamped and things, so we'll have a better understanding. We're looking forward to that. You look at some of these numbers, we're really forecasting within the margin of error, right? So I mean, these numbers are quite small, and you know, one development going one way or the other way could really move the forecast or a new load coming in. So the more finite we can have some of the information, the better we expect to be about forecasting. So I appreciate the board's continued support for the AMI only help us, but I expect that we'll probably have another correction. I don't have a prediction of whether that's up or down, but I expect another correction. So one of the first questions we're going to ask ourselves is, all right, we see our load forecasting shifting down, and the primary purpose for you performing this load forecasting is that or make sure that we've got infrastructure, the appropriate amount of infrastructure in order to meet the needs in place. And so the load forecasting is going down, so we see a decrease in the amount of station builds and station and capacity improvements in our system. And the short answer to that is I would expect that as long as these load forecasts come to fruition and that is sustained over a few year period. So where we're at right now in our infrastructure build is we're not necessarily in catch up, but we have an existing loading on our system that we're realizing today that we seek to try to provide some capacity relief. Up on the screen here, you see 12 of our 34 substations are loaded at 80%. We have 8 stations that are loaded at 90%. So I look forward to this load forecasting and give us an opportunity potentially to catch up. Our substation build, given the market and staffing and other parameters that are going on, permitting and things are taking longer. We've reported that in the past than what we anticipated. So we might be getting a little bit of relief here in the future with the load forecasting, at least that what we see. But for now, we're not recommending that we would adjust our station builds, at least the next few. Want to add any
of that to that, Andy? Yeah. Just on that final bullet on that screen, you can see our peak demand is typically 2 times our average energy, right? Our average energy is right between 200 and 220 average megawatts. And our peaks are right around 500 megawatts. So.
Rebecca, how are we on time? What's that? No, we have that rest on the agenda.
We do have quite a bit, so
okay.
Pick up the pace.
I was going to make a few comments about EV and the low forecasting, but I won't. We'll save that for another time. The map here we've presented in previous presentations, just get a sense of where the district has acquired properties for future substation locations and where we're seeking additional properties. The next slide, we've got a table here that we're monitoring, that we're managing. This was updated here recently in the time frames that we're understanding we might need the substations. But once we realize our new winter peaks this winter, we'll be revising our long-range plan, so there'll be more updates to this. I think what's most important is not necessarily when each one of these substations might be needed, but they are going to be needed at some point in time. So we have 2 teams established. We have a substation build team, and then we also have a site acquisition team. Some of the same members are filling roles in each one of those teams. But we're focused in with the substation build group for the next 3 stations, which are North Shore, Bavarian, and Wenatchee. And then our site acquisition team is focused in on West Wenatchee, which we'll talk about a little bit further, and likely to kick off either Roses and Stamil here pretty soon once we get deeper in the West Wenatchee site acquisition. little bit more information about where we're at right now. So North Shore Substation, we've received all the permitting here recently. We are about to, actually, I think we might be advertising for the construction, primary construction bid that's coming up this spring. So we'll be in construction on the North Shore Substation, at least that's the plan at this point. We're pinning down the distribution connections. So there's some activities about seeking permits and permissions for the distribution side of things to connect the new substation into the existing distribution system. There's ongoing work with that. On the Leavenworth substation that we've been calling Bavarian there, North Road and Chumstick, we are in the middle of cultural assessments, and we're looking into cultural-related things associated with that piece of property. We hope to get a better understanding of what that looks like later on in the spring. However, we are moving forward with design. The design is transferable to a new location if, for whatever reason, that site doesn't work. For us, we potentially could utilize the design and work, design work and things and equipment. We've started some equipment that's transferable to other stations, so activities are moving forward with that. We're going to talk a little bit Wenatchee upsizing. So that's an existing station. We're putting together our project management plans and finalizing plans for that now and looking into our existing permitting and what we need to do there. So we're starting to ramp up. Whole goal is to have three going at some point in time at a various phase. Wenatchee Foothills, we'll talk a little bit more about that. Might make a plug here, various stations rehab. We have several stations that we're rehabbing as we are building new. So increasing capacity, increasing capabilities, improving reliability, expectations, improving conditions and things. So there's ongoing activities associated with our stations. So a little bit more about West Wenatchee. I mentioned before there's been some advertisement. Notifications have gone out to the community surrounding this area. The district has a memo of understanding with the WSU Tree Fruit Research Group to potentially site a substation on their parcel. We have not agreed to sell or purchase property. We've only agreed to perform some feasibility studies associated with this site. There's several sites that WSU Tree Fruit Research has identified that might work on their parcel. We are seeking a first feasibility of a station in that area, seeking public comment, and then hopefully we can arrive at a place where there is mutual benefit for the district and for tree fruit research and long-term needs that we can site a station on this parcel.
How big is that site?
Yeah, it's about seven, a little over 7 acres.
What you're looking at, but that what you've got outlined there is a lot bigger than seven.
Correct. This is their entire parcel, right? So we are looking for potentially a site located within their parcel. So we would carve out either a long-term lease or a border, boundary line adjustment sort of a thing, not sure. The memo of understanding puts a higher priority on doing some sort of a long-term lease, but any decisions about that will come before the board purchase property purchases and things. So what we just have of agreement right now is to study the feasibility and acquire public comment.
We usually look for 2 acres, if possible. Okay, just real quick, wanted to touch on the Wenatchee area substation setting, the outreach summary. Okay, as Chad mentioned, in November of 22, we did mail out to some of the adjacent property owners. I think it was about 700 mailers that went out. It just basically said, hey, we are looking in the area. We're looking at feasibilities. We've made no decisions, and we're going to continue to engage you as we move forward. So you can see the timeline going across the top there. The maroon is kind of our internal process, and then the blue is how our community engagement kind of relates and parallels with that. right now we're moving into the exploration, as Chad had mentioned, just the high-level feasibilities, the fitability of a substation in there. And we're really looking
with Washington State University to identify if there's mutual benefits for them in terms of, you know, improved access or we don't know yet, but we're looking for mutual benefits. In Q1 and Q2 of 2023, we hope to be well into the site selection and engagement process, right? Engagement meaning helping our customers understand the need, what they would see, what it would look like, and how can they, how can we mitigate any concerns they have, such as noise, lighting, and landscaping. So, a lot more to come. We're ramping up our efforts in the West Wenatchee. So, in summary, today, wanted to just note that new multifamily residential construction remains steady in our community. Although we are starting to see a little bit of flattening or some slowing in some of our developments. We're still forecasting somewhere around 800 new residential meters over the next 3 years. The Wenatchee substation property acquisition process is ramping up. We, as Chad mentioned, we do want to advocate to stay the course with our substation build plan to support reliability and capacity for future development, but we're going to keep a close eye on the timing of that as we learn more about our load growth projections. We are positioned very well to support the immediate need for demand today, both electric, water, wastewater, and fiber optics. Countywide planning efforts combined with our advanced metering infrastructure will really help us sharpshoot those load forecasts in the future, and we're really looking forward to getting our hands on that AMI data. And finally, a little bit of good news with load forecasts. That recalibration of the load forecast going from 31 to 15, that resulted in a reduction of approximately 10 average megawatts and a corresponding increase in the estimated wholesales. So that's actually some good news for us. So we're happy to bring that. All right, thanks for your time. Are there any questions that we can answer?
Yep. You bet. Yeah, I'd like to commend staff for putting together the site acquisition team. These are hard facilities to site, and you have to be way out in front. So I know a lot of work has been done by these two and others to get to the point where we actually have a site acquisition team looking out there beyond the immediate need. So thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kirk, at this time, can we move public comment up?
Sure, certainly.
Do we have anybody in the public that would like to address the commissioners? We're going to just make sure that we've got time for you to speak. Gentlemen,
on this topic, right?
On any topic that you'd like to speak to.
Thank you.
Thanks for being patient.
Yeah.
Hey, no worries. It's a very interesting process. Excuse me while I pull up my statement. All right. So thank you for having me back again. I was just here a couple weeks ago to talk to you folks. So I appreciate your time and hearing me out. So I have a prepared statement I'd like to read for you all. Again, my name is Tony Edwards. My current address for the record is 215 South Conklin Road in Spokane Valley. However, just last December, I moved from Wenatchee. I lived here for 16 years. Again, my name is Tony Edwards. I'm the lead representative for the Southwest Mountain States Regional Council of Carpenters. And the millwright trade is one of many that we cover. As a follow-up to my comments in the last meeting, the carpenters, our state-accredited apprenticeship and local community, are concerned about Enzicon's ability to staff the project at Rock Island with skilled, qualified labor. I have to ask the question, what is General Electric's position on this, and why would General Electric not want to comply with the laws outlined in the revised Code of Washington? The following language was taken from the RCWs listed in the Washington State Labor and Industries website.
apprenticeable occupation means an occupation for which an apprenticeship program has been approved by the Washington State Apprenticeship and Training Council pursuant to Chapter 49.04 RCW. Skilled journeyperson means a worker who meets all of the following criteria. A, the worker either graduated from an apprenticeship program for the applicable occupation that was approved by the Washington State Apprenticeship and Training Council according to Chapter 49.04, or has at least as many hours of on-the-job experience in the applicable occupation that would be required to graduate from an apprenticeship program approved by the Washington State Apprenticeship and Training Council according to Chapter 49.04 RCW. The following implementation schedule must be complied with to meet the requirements of RCW 49.80.020 for a skilled and trained workforce to perform all on-site work within an apprenticeable occupation in the building and construction trades. By January 1, 2022, at least 35% of the skilled journeypersons must be graduates of an apprenticeship program for the applicable occupation approved by the Washington State Apprenticeship and Training Council under Chapter 49.04 RCW. By January 1, 2024, at least 60% of the skilled journeypersons must be graduates of an apprenticeship program for the applicable occupation approved by the Washington State Apprenticeship and Training Council according to Chapter 49.04 RCW. Lastly, by January 1, 2022, all workers in the skilled and trained workforce must have completed within the past 3 calendar years at least 20 hours of approved advanced safety training for workers at high hazard facilities. Continuing my comments, NZCON has been granted a training agent status by the Washington State UBC Joint Apprenticeship Training Committee. This provides them with the ability to claim that they belong to a Washington State accredited apprenticeship program. NZCON has been abusing our apprenticeship to get their foot in the door and to mislead the Chelan County PUD. In fact, NZCON's training agent status was revoked in August for noncompliance with the Washington State UBC and JADC standards. NZCON has never turned out a journeyman from the apprenticeship. We do not believe that they have the ability to provide a workforce with a 35% graduation rate as required by the RCWs this year. Nor do we believe that they will have the ability to provide a workforce with a 60% graduation rate as required by the year 2024. In conclusion, we believe that NZCON will supply unskilled, unsafe, or inexperienced labor from around the country that will reap the benefits of our state's prevailing wages. And then we'll send those wages out of the area. That does not promote community wealth. We also believe that the taxpayers and customers of the Chelan County PUD, your constituents who are paying the bill, do not approve of this. The United Brotherhood of Carpenter Millwrights live and work in the Columbia Basin. They are the best trained, skilled, and qualified apprentices and graduated journeymen in Central and Eastern Washington. Again, I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Quick question.
Yep.
Tony, how do you spell NZCON? E-N-Z-I-C-O-N?
Yes.
NZCON. Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure that we understood. So Mr. Edwards did provide comment last time. We did provide responses to the questions last time.
And I'm understanding your concern here is just related to potential compliance with one of our subcontractors. Is that
correct? Correct. So Anzacon is the labor broker.
Yep.
Right out of Colorado.
Yep.
And they are supplying labor for General Electric.
Yeah. Project. Just wanted to make sure we had everything here. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have any other public comment? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
You too.
Thank you.
All right.
We could get to the next one. It's okay.
You have time?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. Mike and Janet, you want to come up for the quarterly energy resources update?
Kept looking for Rob and didn't see him. So then, well,
He's the next one. We probably won't get to him. If you're listening,
oh,
Rob,
hey, I was one ahead.
We may not get to you, Rob. Okay.
Well, good morning. Jan and I are here to give you an update from Energy Resources on the Q3 quarterly board update. My name is Mike Bradshaw, and I'm the director of Energy Structuring and Trading.
And Janet Jaspers, director of Energy Planning and Trading.
Okay, while we're here, to give you an update on the 2022 net wholesale revenue forecast, an update on what's going on in the Western power markets, and what's going on in operations and planning. A couple key points to point out is I think we have some good news to report, primarily due to higher wholesale energy prices, and also what comes along with that is higher retained surplus proceeds from all long-term power contracts. To put numbers to it, our net wholesale revenue is forecasted to be over $72 million at this point, which is $8 million above budget. And the other energy-related revenue, which includes the retained net proceeds, is forecasted to be $68 million, which is $57 million better than forecast. To show that on a graph, we introduced this chart last quarter update. It's more of a comprehensive look of our electric revenue forecast. To kind of go walk through it again, on the far left column, that is the forecast for 2022 that we set back in, I think, November last year for the 2022 budget. And then the columns off to the right are forecasts as of the end of Q3. Going from bottom to top, okay. Oh, I see the camera, okay. Going from bottom to top, the bottom is the blue. That's the expected revenue from electric retail sales. Kind of the orange color in the middle there is the revenue expected from long-term power contracts. And then the gray is the revenue expected from off-system energy sales. And then the sliver of purple is other energy-related revenue. And the top is the net wholesale revenue.
Where's the gray?
The gray on the three left columns on top of the orange.
Thank you.
And then for points of comparison, we have that green line that runs across the top. That was the forecast for those time periods back in November when we set the 2022 budget. And you can see, to state the obvious, all stacks are higher than that line. And then the solid red line that's above the green line is the same forecast, but last quarter. So everything's up from budget as well has increased from last quarter as well. Diving into the 2022 bucket specifically, some of the line items here to point out. The top section is the wholesale revenue, and the budget was 64. The current forecast is 62. You can see a variance on that top line on the far right column of $8 million. That is primarily due to energy prices being above what they were when we set the budget.
You were too.
And the bottom right, you can see, is combined total of 64.7 variance. And the big driver there, you can see, is the long-term power contract retained surplus proceeds, which is $52.5 million. Looking at our energy commitments and our hedging policies, this is 2023 through 2027. On the left is our fixed price. On the right is our physical, which is fixed price and index. The thing to look at on these two charts here is the columns are below or at or below the red line on top, indicating that we are within the hedge policy limits. Last slide here until I hand it off to Janet. Just again, a snapshot of our fixed price slice sales. This has not changed since the last quarter, so this looks the same, where we have 25% slice sold for this year and then tapers down as you go through time. With that, I'll hand it to Janet to talk about Western power markets.
Good job, Janet.
It's hard. I could have left it.
Yeah, I don't think we're used to it yet.
Good morning. Lots is changing, or a lot of stuff is changing in power markets right now. So at the very top, we have the Western Resource Adequacy Program. We call it RAP. So kind of take a look at making sure all the utilities and entities have enough capacity to serve their load. I think earlier, Andrew was sitting here and he said, our peak is about twice as much as our average energy. And so it's just to make sure we have enough capacity to serve that peak during the winter and the summer. So been working on this Western Resource Adequacy Program. On the right, you can see the western part of the United States. The navy blue are the entities who are now working on this RAP. We're looking for the binding program to go into effect in 2025. And everyone is going to be making a decision whether or not to join or not. That's ourselves included. In addition to the resource adequacy, we're seeing a lot of changes coming into effect because of the Climate Commitment Act. So it's, I think, I've been here a long time and seen a lot of things come. There's more uncertainty with this than anything I can ever remember. The carbon tracking starts January 1st. There are so many unknowns that it's kind of unbelievable to me. So all of the Washington utilities are going to be allocated these no-cost allowances. We don't really know how many. So those have not been allocated yet. The allowances are going to be auctioned. The first kind of indication of pricing is going to come from that first auction, which is in late February. So you're going to have almost two full months of operation in this program where you don't know the pricing. We have seen a couple studies. One says maybe around $40. Another study said maybe around $70 per allowance. The floor price for an allowance is right around $23. So that really converts, could be the adders to the pricing. Could be all over the board for the cost of carbon, probably somewhere between $17.50 per megawatt hour to probably upwards of $30 per megawatt hour just for that carbon component. Department of Ecology has come out with some binding rules. They are pretty vague. So we're going to get allocated these no-cost allowances. They've said they're going to true up, so we're not really sure how that process works. Are they going to just change the amount of allocation next time? Are they going to pull some back if we didn't use them? And so all of that really is affecting liquidity in 2023.
It's nerve-wracking when you say ecology has final rules that are vague.
Yes, yes.
Janet, I have a question before you change the slide. Looks like the state of Arizona is parceled up here. Can you explain what's going on in Arizona?
I think APS is part of the RAP. Public Service of Arizona, I think, is part of the RAP. I'm not really sure what that boundary is around those two areas, but kind of the larger utilities in Arizona are a part of the RAP.
Could a big part of that be the Navajo Nation?
I'm going to have to check and get back to you. Sure.
That wouldn't represent, I'm just guessing, not Southwestern Power Pool wouldn't be in that, would it?
No, that covers a lot more territory. But this, what Janet's alluding to is it's a voluntary program at this point, and right. some are volunteering to be in, and some aren't. And we'll find out which ones at this point.
Okay.
I think that's what you're seeing there with that boundary.
Curiosity
question. Sure. Yeah.
In the Arizona. Seems yeah. Odd. Doesn't mean that they wouldn't. At this point, they're not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. We'll get back to you on the which ones.
Okay.
So the decision for us to join says mid-December. Mm-hmm. Is that still?
December 5th. That's what we're planning. And you're going to hear more about this
right,
afternoon.
This afternoon.
Right.
Yeah.
Switching to natural gas prices always affect our electricity prices. The hub closest to us is Sumas, which is the red line. You can see that over the summer, it was the lowest of all of these different hubs. And as we approach winter, it really starts increasing and kind of approaches like PG&E's Citygate hub, kind of rising natural gas prices for this time period. Take a look at what natural gas has done since we were here last quarter. It's actually dropped quite a bit. Last quarter, when we brought this update to you, it was $8.29. Now it's $5.90 per MMBTU. So it looks like it really came off the peak. But if you kind of zoom out and look at a larger time period, starting from 2022, we had peaks that were quite a bit higher in 2005 and 2006 and 2008. And so you can see the yellow box, which was just the previous line.